Dead. All right, we'll see.
I figured I didn't miss anything.
Okay. Yeah, Elizabeth didn't miss anything because last week, you guys didn't catch me, but we finished up with the minor holidays, if you remember, and then we started in on Rosh Hashanah. Well, we had already done Rosh Hashanah before.
Oh.
And I got confused because we were going out of order.
Why
you were wondering. Okay, yes, yeah. So tonight we're going to move on. So I thought I would pass this around to show anybody. Last week I showed you that we're turning the class book into two books, really. This is the teacher's notes. It's got all the answers in it. And this is the workbook. We're having it published. Cheryl. Yeah. So they're waiting on me going through them for one last final proofreading. But I'll just pass this around. You can take a look at it. You didn't get to see it last time. And so the class will change a little bit because the books do cost. And up to now, I've been just handing out handouts. But they're not that much. They're, I think, 15 maybe is what they are. So I'm actually going to be using this to help me do some proofreading as we go through this. So we finished up all the holidays, and let me give out worksheets to Sue and Desi. Does anybody else need a worksheet? Forgot theirs. Same one from last time. So let's see. This one's for you. These go around to Desi and Gerardo. Anybody else need one? Nope. You're all good? All right. Okay. And we are going to go to... You need one? That's fine. No, okay. I have lots.
Oh, that'd be great.
All right, pass another one around.
I cannot tell you how many times I've pulled that out and looked at it. Every time I'm like, what time of year is it? I'm looking.
Yeah, they'll all be there. But then if you forget your book, you're in big trouble because...
Well, you're going to have to go to the handout.
You have to buy another one or something, right? Okay, we are on page 11 of your notes. And about one-third of the way down. And so, but before we do that, why don't we just go back to page 3 of your notes and just point out the table that's there. Because we want to make sure everybody understands it. So this lists all of the Jewish holidays, all the biblical ones, plus one traditional one, Hanukkah. And it lists their English names and the variations in how they're said.
Oh, wait. I heard a new one for Pentecost.
Yes.
Whit Sunday.
Really? Whit Sunday.
Yep. That was the medieval term for Pentecost.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
W-I-T?
Uh-huh. All one word.
Yeah, I've seen that before.
So there's the English names in one column, and then the modern Hebrew name is, as some of you have learned already, that there's two dialects of Hebrew. There's the one spoken in Israel, which came from the Sephardic people, who were the Jewish people who lived around the Mediterranean. And then there's the one that most of the older people in America speak, or no, it's called Ashkenazi, and it's the dialect that was spoken in Europe until the people kind of came here from Europe. So I've got a column that's the modern Hebrew name, the English name, and then the Ashkenazi Hebrew name, and then the biblical reference, the time of the year, and who the holidays are important to, what they commemorate, and what their prophetic meaning is. So those of you who have been through this section should remember some of those things. Hi.
Hi.
Do we have got a couple of seats over there? Oh, you got to go all the way around, I think. Will they make it? This is Kathy and Aaron. And you probably know everybody except this is Desi. She's here for the first time. And this is Sue, who's here for the first time. And do you guys have worksheets or do you need worksheets? Okay. So we were just looking, going over the chart, which will help you keep all of these holidays straight. And the next one coming up is Purim very soon, like a week and a half or two. I think we're celebrating here on March 10th, which is next Saturday. Not this Saturday, but the next Saturday. And then about a month after that, Passover. Okay, so now if you go to page 11, and let me just explain for Desi and Sue's sake that there's five sections to this class. We're in one now on Jewish identity and lifestyle, we call it. So it covers the holidays and what it means to be kosher and other things like that. And then there's a section on Jewish evangelism, how to share the gospel with Jewish people, a section on what we believe. What do you need?
Do I write in here if I found it out?
Yeah, you can, absolutely.
Do you want to
highlight
it or something?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. You already spotted something. Oh, that's...
It receives it.
And then there's a section on the congregation itself, what our vision is and our history and how we're organized so people know how they can fit in. And the last section is on something called the Messianic Vision, which is kind of the overview for what the Messianic movement is about, you know, for the whole world. So we're about three quarters of the way through this section on Jewish lifestyle and identity. We covered all the Jewish holidays. Last week we covered some of the minor holidays like Tisha B'Av and Tu B'Shavat and Yom HaShoah, some of the ones that are not in the Bible. And today we're going to take up what everybody usually finds a really interesting subject, keeping kosher, kashrut is how you say it in Hebrew. So we're going to follow the usual procedure of having somebody read the scripture and then try to answer a question, and we will excuse Shea from that. So why don't we start with Hannah? If you could read in Leviticus chapter 11, verses 2 through 8. You got a Bible.
Do, but I got my glasses.
Oh,
we'll see.
And there's coffee there, yeah. If anybody would like some.
Is he here?
Yes,
it
is. Okay.
Okay,
Leviticus 11, verse 2. Tell the people of Israel, these are the living creatures which you may eat among all the land animals. Any that has a separate hoof, which is completely divided and chews the cud. These animals you may eat, but you are not to eat those that only chew the cud or only have a separate hoof. For example, the camel, the coney, and the hare are unclean for you, because they chew the cud but don't have a separate hoof. While the pig is unclean for you because, although it has a separate and completely divided hoof, it doesn't chew the cud. You are not to eat meat from these or to touch their carcasses. They are unclean for you.
Okay, want to try the question? And remember the rules. Hannah gets the first crack at answering the question, and then people can chip in beyond that.
What is the test for a kosher animal? It has to chew the cud, and it's got to have a separate hoof, and it's got to be completely divided.
Completely divided hoof, right. So if you can think of some common animals that don't pass that test, like horses don't. If you ever looked at a horseshoe, horse hoof, it's not divided. But cows, if you look at it, there's two halves to the hoof. Camels have like a horseshoe hoof. And then there, as it says here, there are some animals that chew the cud, but they don't have hoofs. Like rabbits actually chew the cud, surprisingly.
What is cud?
Oh, okay. What is cud? Who knows what cud is?
Don't that when they eat it and bring it back up?
Yes. Certain animals, they partially digest the food in their stomach, and then they bring it back up and chew it again. And then it goes down into another stomach, and cows do that. Absolutely, cows, yeah.
Does the gizzard count like birds?
No, but there's other tests for birds. There's a whole other section on birds. Right, right. Right. Deer are kosher, absolutely. Right, right, right.
Deer are kosher?
Yep, yep. They have split hoof. They chew the cut.
Deer
yep.
do?
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Deer, antelope, elk, moose. Yeah, I think they're all kosher, I believe. Yeah, yeah. We'd have to check because I've never eaten one of those. Well, antelope. Where the Bible speaks about antelope and goats, certainly sheep. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Funny that mentioned that.
Okay, Shay's making notes and jokes. All right. Okay, Jenny, you want to take the next one? Okay. We'd like to hear it in Swedish.
Yeah.
Give us a little taste. One verse in Swedish.
Okay. Detta är allt vad ni får äta av det som lever i vattnet. Allt det i vattnet, vare sig sjöar eller strömmar som har fel, det får ni äta.
Wow, I don't think I've ever heard Swedish before. That's interesting. Really. Okay, go ahead. 9 through 12.
Of all the things that live in the water, you may eat these. Anything in the water that has fins and scales, whether in seas or in rivers, this you may eat. But everything in the seas and rivers without both fins and scales, all the small water creatures and all the living creatures.
Is it big enough?
It's a detestable thing.
Oh, okay.
Yes, these will be detestable for you. You are not to eat their meat, and you are to detest their carcasses. Whatever lacks fins and scales in the water is a detestable thing for you.
Okay, try the question.
Question, what's the test for a kosher fish? Well, clearly it has to have fins and scales.
Fins and scales,
yeah.
Okay. And Kathy, the next one, 13 through 19.
These are the birds you are to detest and not eat because they are detestable. The eagle, the vulture, and black vulture, the red kite, and any kind of black kite. Any kind of raven, the horned owl, and screech owl, the gull, any kind of hawk, the little owl, the cormorant, the great owl.
19.
Okay. The white owl, the desert owl, the osprey, the stork, any kind of heron, the hoopoe, and the bat.
Okay. I'm going to try their question.
What kinds of birds are listed here?
Oh, wasn't there another question?
Oh. No. Is there a test for kosher birds?
You're right. They're just listed, right? Okay, now I want to try the next question.
What kind of birds are listed here? Owls and ravens.
Right. Anybody see with their knowledge of zoology what's, Shay's got it written out, scavengers.
Mm-hmm.
Predators.
But predators also. Okay. So now there's a this triggers a little bit of thinking. If you go back to the test of the animals, do you see anything in the test of animals similar to this? Mm-hmm. In the hoofed animals that chew the cud?
They're not predators.
Not predators, right.
They're not scavengers.
They're not scavengers, okay? Because even think of a pig. Pig has a cloven hoof, but it doesn't chew the cud. And everybody is probably aware the pig is well known to be a scavenger, right?
It'll eat anything.
And in some other translations, it's a little clearer amongst the birds because it talks about buzzards, and vultures, which we all know are scavengers. Now, how about the fish? Anybody see a similar pattern in the fish?
All the things that don't have fins and scales are bottom feeders.
Exactly, yeah. Bottom feeders. So, as anybody see the wisdom of God beginning to shine forth in this?
Don't eat all the waste they eat.
You are what you eat, and yes. You'll be taking in the energy of what they've done.
Well, not only energy, but if you eat, you know, a predator, you don't know what it has eaten, right? So it could have eaten a sick animal before that, and that goes for birds, fish, and for mammals. Like any of them could have been, predators that we think of are very regal, like a lion or something. You don't know if its last kill was sick. Right, right. So it's amazing when you grasp that. I mean, when I first grasped that, it was like amazing the wisdom of God here. Mm-hmm. This is 3,500 years ago that Moses wrote this. That you can see it's not human wisdom,
right?
Because they would not have figured this out back
it.
Then without knowledge of germs and all those kind of things. So, mm-hmm.
My Bible specifically lists ostrich, and that one did not. I don't know what translation.
Some of the
Well,
yes, the translations are not consistent by what they are.
Well, I just question because ostrich has become like a new kind of meat to eat that people are really big on eating.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So is it kosher or not?
You know, I think I saw something in the Jewish news. There were debates going on about that.
Well, every time a new animal comes up that people want to start eating, they always have some kind of debate
about it, right, what's culture or not. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right.
You know, in Genesis chapter 9, verse 3, the Noahide laws,
right.
All things are shall be food for you.
Yes.
There's no distinction.
Right.
No.
Right. Well, these are given to Israel.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So this is the difference. The Noahide laws were for everybody.
Yeah.
And these are given to Israel. And you can see, you know, the wisdom in it, like I said, of it's got to be God's wisdom.
Yeah.
So what is the other set of laws?
Well, in Genesis 6, David's pointing out that when God made the covenant with Noah, he said that, you know, you can eat any of the,
right.
Of the
yeah,
animals.
Before it was just like plants.
Right.
And
right. Okay, so let's look at the last one here, which is also interesting, although not that applicable. Aaron 11, 20 through 23.
All flying insects that walk on all fours are to be detestable to you. There are, however, some winged creatures that walk on all fours that you may eat. Those that have jointed legs for hopping on the ground. Of these, you may eat any kind of locust, catbird, cricket, or grasshopper. But all other winged creatures that have four legs, you are to detest.
So that's what John the Baptist was eating.
Test for kosher insects. They have to walk on all fours, or they have to. They have to have jointed legs.
Good, good. And wings.
Yeah, and wings.
Yeah, but we don't really care.
No.
At least.
Unless you're in a jail cell.
Not going to eat them anyway.
Yeah,
right.
True.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this that you've just heard now is basically what is called biblically kosher. That's what we would call biblically kosher or biblically kashrut. Okay, and does anybody know what's the difference between biblical kosher and traditional kosher?
It was in the Bible.
Biblical kosher is in the Bible, but what is traditional kosher like that makes it different from biblical kosher? Like how?
More rules.
What rules?
Sets of dishes.
Milk and meat.
Right.
Okay.
That's rabbinical.
You can't eat milk and meat, which is not in the Bible.
Right,
it's rabbinical.
Right. Well, they use it. Don't boil a kid in his mother's milk.
Right. And there's also requirements on how the meat is slaughtered.
Right. Drain.
And
it
has
to drain it.
Well, it's in the Bible in that there's a commandment not to eat blood. But the actual method of the slaughtering is very much traditional because the rabbis have to inspect the slaughterhouse, and a person who does the slaughtering has to be actually qualified by the rabbis. A shochet has to do it, and so you could have a slaughterhouse that does everything just the way it should be. The blood goes out, but it wouldn't be kosher, traditionally kosher. Wouldn't have the stamp on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you should also understand that that's a pretty big business,
yeah.
Because there are the rabbis who do the inspections, and they get paid to do that so that people can put, you know, kosher on their meat products. However, most of the meat that we get today, like if you go to the supermarket, the blood has been drained from it as well as it can be, because if they left the blood in, it would spoil faster.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the food, the meat packers and slaughterhouses, they all do their best to get all the blood out, because otherwise their product wouldn't be as good. So I personally don't have any problem with eating, you know, meat that has not been stamped kosher, because it's pretty much the blood has been out of it. But the kosher meat is much more expensive, and there's also different levels of it, depending on, you know, who the rabbi is that inspects it.
Mm-hmm.
So there are people in Rochester here who are Orthodox who won't eat any meat sold in Rochester. I've known some of them. They actually travel down to New York City or up to Montreal to buy their meat, and they bring back a whole freezer full of it, because that's the only meat that, you know, they that they would say is okay. So there's different, you know, different standards of it. So just to understand the milk and meat thing a little bit, Deuteronomy 14, verse 21. Let's see, I guess that's not in your notes, but it's in my book here. So why don't, David, if you could read that. This is the basis of the milk and meat thing.
14. You shall not eat anything which is wise of itself. You shall give it to the alien who is in your town so that he may eat it. Or you shall sell it to a foreigner, for you are a holy people to the Lord your God. You shall not boil a young goat in its mother's milk.
Okay, so actually there's a really good commandment there before that, which is don't eat roadkill. Which again is health wise very, very significant, because you know you don't know how long the animal's been dead, and if something dies in the field you don't know what it died of, so that's forbidden. But the milk and meat thing that many of you have heard about is from the end of the verse that David just read. You shall not boil a young animal or a kid in its mother's milk. And this is just an example of, if any of you were here last Saturday and I talked about the rules that were made about the Sabbath, okay, this is an example of how those rules are added in another area, in the area of food laws. So because the rabbis had this attitude that Yeshua actually was speaking against in that passage I spoke about on Saturday, where they always interpret things extra strict, remember me talking about that? They said, okay, well, it says this, you shall not boil a kid in its mother's milk. So what happens if you're eating some meat and you're drinking some milk and you happen to be eating the meat from the calf of the mother whose milk you have? Okay, then you'd be breaking God's law. So therefore, we will forbid it ever to have milk and meat together at the same meal. Mm-hmm. So you can see what they're doing. They're taking that and making this extra piety and making a rule to put a fence around the law. So this has become, this is a great example of how the fences become huge. Mm-hmm. Because not only are you not supposed to eat a cheeseburger, basically, but it also then, when they used to have plates that were not glazed, they understood that if I had, you know, some milk dish in this plate, something made with milk like yogurt or something, and then later I used that plate to eat meat, that there might be a little bit of the yogurt left and it would get on the meat. So I would have to have either wash the dish really well or have a different dish. And it became separate dishes. So in an Orthodox household, you've got two sets of dishes.
How did it implement a separate kitchen?
And then it went even beyond to say, well, you might contaminate things, so we'll have two separate kitchens even. So you see how it grows? It's really insidious and it's amazing. And this is why, you know, like I talked about Saturday, in Israel, you either have to be Orthodox or nothing. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it's not like you can be Reformed or Conservative here, where you can be much more lenient. Because of that, in Israel, like 85 to 90% of the people are secular, and only 10% of the people are Orthodox. So you have a comment?
Yeah. Was it, and maybe this isn't right, the question isn't right in either way, was it in the New Testament or the Old Testament that, I don't know if it was Israel, was told not to take away anything from God's law or not to add
absolutely
anything?
Right. They were told not to take away or add. And Moses said that, right?
And that was the Old Testament.
Right.
And so these priests,
Ecclesiastics, and also in Revelation.
In the New Testament.
Again?
Well, Revelation says it, but Moses also says it, right? Right. You're not to take it away. Right.
So it was before Yeshua, Christ comes, and it was the false piety of
the religious leaders.
Of the priests kept adding and adding and adding, because it would elevate them? Or?
Well, it came out of the need to make judgments. Like there were times when people would come to them and say, you know, well, is this animal kosher? We just found this animal. You know, is this animal kosher? And they would make judgments on these things. But then the thing that Yeshua was criticizing that I spoke about on Saturday was that whenever they made a judgment, they always made the judgment more strict. as strict as they could possibly make it, rather than make it lenient. And you find that pattern all through Judaism, which brought about this legalism. And it's not just Judaism, because you know in the Catholic Church, many of the same attitudes were there. Well, you know, we need to make it as strict as possible, because who knows? God might have meant it that way, and we don't want to be found falling short of what God said to do. So that's
the idea. Motivated by fear too.
It was a piety, a false piety, a religious spirit, and it was a false fear of God. And what I spoke about Saturday, if you didn't catch it, was that what that did is it gave people a false picture of what God was really like. And so when Yeshua said, "I desire mercy and not sacrifice," this is exactly what he was talking about here. All these rules were like making a sacrifice. You had to keep this rule, and you had to keep this rule. And he was saying, that makes it not show the mercy of God. And God is merciful. But if you were to observe people living an orthodox lifestyle, you would not think that they were worshiping a merciful God, because they're keeping so many rules and they have to watch out for these things all the time. So
it's so rigid.
It's rigid, right. Yes.
So many of the kosher laws have shown to have a scientific behind them. Do you think there's anything behind the not boiling a baby in its mother's milk? Like maybe there's some disease that if it's in the mother and it's in the kid.
The only thing I've heard is some people think that it's hard to digest milk and meat at the same time, but I've never experienced that.
No.
And I've never seen any medical thing on that.
I heard some like the pagans put it on the trees or something. I've heard that down through the years. I don't know where that came from.
It could be a spoilage thing, you know, too, if not cooking. No, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. So.
Those children have milk with their meal.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's, you know, in terms of how we handle things here as a congregation, we say that's okay, because it's biblical, and it's not, we're not keeping the traditional. So, okay, just some other things. In terms of the eating dairy and meat at the same time, there's actually a time that's been set. From when you eat a dairy meal, you have to wait, I don't remember what it is, but several hours before you can eat meat, because... Okay, another one of those extra piety things. If you put them both in your stomach, they're seething. Okay? So actually, I should have said that. That's where this came from, the actual not eating them together, was that the rabbis understood that, okay, we're not supposed to cook them together, but if I eat them, then they're in my stomach together, and they're seething in the stomach.
Wow.
So again, you can see that extra, the piety thing going on. Right? So this is the fence around the law, and it's interesting in my family, and I don't know about yours, Sue, but in my family, I have couple of aunts that kept kosher, so, you know, in their house they would be kosher, but when they'd go out to eat, they'd go to a Chinese restaurant and have shrimp and lobster sauce, you know. It's just... And I remember going out with them after I became a believer, you know, and going to a restaurant and a Chinese restaurant and choosing a non-pork, you know, thing, and them questioning me about it, and like, it's just so hypocritical. They're doing it in the house, but they can go out to eat and not do it. You know, just people make up their own rules. Sometimes.
They think God doesn't go to Chinese restaurants.
Yeah, God can't see in a Chinese restaurant. You know?
He doesn't do takeout.
Right.
Isn't that where they go on Christmas?
Oh, yeah.
That's a Jewish tradition, yeah, just to go to the movies and a Chinese restaurant on Christmas Day. Right.
It's in the Talmud.
So now let's talk about another interesting thing about kosher, which is what's called kosher for Passover. Okay? And it's not in your notes, so just take notes in a blank space. So the reason that there's a special kosher for Passover is that it's not supposed to be an leaven eaten for those 7 days. So the tradition developed about this, that of cleaning all the leaven out of the house, and it actually says that you should have no leaven on your premises. And the tradition that has developed is if you have like stuff with leaven in it in your freezer and you don't want to waste it, everybody in the synagogue brings it to the synagogue, and the rabbi sells it to a non-Jew for a dollar, and the non-Jew takes it all home, puts it in his freezer, and then after Passover, he brings it back, and everybody buys it back.
What about the hind part of the cow? You can't eat it.
Yeah, there's also because of I think that's because of Jacob's his joint being put out of the joint.
Yeah.
Not to eat that sinew. Right, right. Jewish people don't eat the meat from the hind part of the cow. And I believe that's because of Jacob when he wrestled with God, his leg was put out of joint. I don't know how they got to that one, but that's another one. Okay. But this is a really interesting one. Leaven is, you know, yeast, right? Or baking powder, something that makes things leaven. But the scientists discovered, and not just scientists, but people know this, if you've ever made sourdough bread, anybody here ever made sourdough bread? You take a little bit of flour and you take a little bit of water and just leave it in a warm place. And after a while, it starts bubbling, and it actually will leaven the bread. So when they discovered this, and I suppose this was very early, they understood that if you were going to make matzah, then if you mix the flour and the water to make the matzah, and you didn't bake it right away, it would start leavening of its own. So you have, if you go to the store like in December, you'll find matzah on the shelves. But then if you go to the store around this time of the year, you'll find matzah and it says kosher for Passover on it. And the kosher for Passover matzah, the bakeries where it's baked, the rabbi inspects and makes sure that from the time the water and the flour are mixed to when it's baked is only 18 minutes or less. Otherwise, there's going to be some of this leavening. So this has led to Orthodox people also having a different set of dishes for Passover. So you got three sets of dishes, the milk dishes and the meat dishes, four sets actually, and the milk dishes for Passover and the meat dishes for Passover. So you can see maybe that's why you need
two kitchens.
I mean, that's why you need two kitchens. You got so many dishes. Right, right. So again, you see these traditions becoming like monstrosities, really.
And then
they get
have
built.
Dishes for the Gentiles and the dishes for Jews.
I've never seen that.
No.
No.
I have a lady who cleans a Jewish person's house, and she is not allowed to eat off their dishes.
Yeah.
So the housekeeper.
I've never heard of it.
By accident, she had forgotten, and the husband came in and saw that she was eating on the dishes, and he took the dish and he threw it in the trash.
Wow,
that might just be a prejudice because have you ever heard of that?
I've never heard that. No,
the Jewish person.
But it reminds me of the movie The Help. Have you seen the movie The Help?
Yes,
where the issue was the bathroom.
Remember when they're telling the new girl,
the dishes too?
She's like, make sure you have a cup and a plate, and that's the only cup and plate that you ever use. You never use any of the other ones, and make sure you keep it in a special spot.
Yeah, that was really powerful.
That's
a
prejudice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So let's take a look now at what's back in your notes on page 11. We're going to look at what happened with the new covenant concerning the food laws, because there's a lot of misunderstanding about this. And we're going to start by reading in Acts chapter 10, verses 10 through 16. And let me just set the stage for this. It's the Lord gave his disciples what we call the Great Commission. And he said, go into all the world. People remember him and preach the gospel. Well, if you read through the book of Acts, the first nine chapters, they didn't do that. And in my studies, I've come to understand that the reason they didn't do that is there was a very strong prejudice against a Jewish person going into the house of a Gentile. And the prejudice was not based on, you know, the things that we think of as prejudice, but it was based on the purity laws in the Bible. Now, what the purity laws were about was that you were not allowed to worship in the temple unless you were what's called ritually pure. And you became ritually unpure if you, like, touched a dead body, or you touched an unkosher animal, or you touched something that had touched an unkosher animal or a dead body. And so what happened was that the religious leaders had come to the conclusion that if you went into the house of a non-Jew, you never knew whether they had unkosher food around or what. So, you know, even if you didn't eat there, or even if when they put some food on your plate, you know, you said, is this pork or, you know, what is this? You might touch something that was ritually unclean. And if you did touch something that was ritually unclean, before you were allowed to worship in the temple, you had to go through a 7-day cleansing process. You had to be immersed in water, you had to go to the priest, had to do all these things, which was expensive. You had to pay to do these things. So people did not want to become unclean, ceremonially unclean. So what developed out of that was that a Jew would not go into the house of a Gentile. So if you could put yourself in God's place, you know, the Messiah comes, the gospel is for all nations, God has a problem. Because the people that he brought it to, who are supposed to go and share this with the rest of the world, refuse to go to the house of anybody who's not Jewish and who's not keeping all of these cleanliness rules, these ritual cleanliness rules. So this is what the situation was through the first chapter, 9 chapters of the book of Acts. And if you read it looking for that, you'll see that, because they didn't go to non-Jewish places. They went to Samaria, which were half Jews. They went to, you know, to all of Israel, but they didn't go to the Roman nation. So we pick it up. This is before that. This is before that happened with Paul.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah. Acts chapter 10. So who are we up to? Desi, verses 10-16.
He began to feel hungry.
This is speaking about Peter, by the way. Right.
He began to feel hungry and wanted something to eat, but while they were preparing the meal, he fell into a trance in which he saw heaven open and something that looked like a large sheet being lowered to the ground by its four corners. In it were all kinds of four-footed animals, crawling creatures, and wild birds. Then a voice came to him, "Get up, Caiaphas, slaughter and eat." But
Caiaphas, Peter's Hebrew name.
Caiaphas, Peter, and said, "No, sir, absolutely not. I have never eaten food that was unclean or..."
Treif, I should define that. That means unkosher.
Okay. The voice spoke to him a second time. "Stop treating as unclean what God has made clean."
Okay, stop there.
Okay.
So what has happened over the centuries is that something that we call antinomian theology, which you've probably heard me mention, anti means against, nomos means the law. So it's theology that is saying that the law is really not relevant to us anymore, or the law is not important, has interpreted this passage to say, this is one of the key passages that has been used, to say that the new covenant has overturned the food laws. God spoke to Peter and overturned the food laws, and therefore it was extrapolated to all other what we call the Jewish laws, which would be about the holidays, about Passover, about circumcision, all the laws that set the Jewish people apart as a separate people. And so many people you'll meet and ask about this passage, and they say, "Oh, God told Peter to eat unclean food." Sounds like that, right? Mm-hmm. Sounds like that.
The Lord doesn't say that at all.
Well, but it sounds like that. So the question is, has God done away with these food laws? Mm-hmm. So let's have Elizabeth read. Hi. We got one seat there, one right down here, one here. This is Jessica, everybody. And Joshua. Hi, Joshua. So if you want to try to catch up, do you guys have worksheets? No, all right. I've got some extras here. And pass one to Joshua, and Jessica take one. We're on page 11. Okay. So we just read the passage in Acts chapter 10 where it sounds like God is saying to Peter, you can eat unkosher food because I'm making it clean now. And the theologians over the centuries who took the position that the Jewish laws no longer apply have used this as their main proof text, if you will. So what's really interesting about this is all we have to do is look down about 12 more verses, and who are we up to? Elizabeth. Elizabeth is going to read how Peter actually interpreted the vision. Okay?
Acts 10:28-29. "And he said to them, 'You yourselves know how unlawful it is for a man who is a Jew to associate with a foreigner or to visit him. and yet God has shown me that I should not call any man unholy or unclean. That is why I came without even raising any objection when I was sent for. So I ask for what...
Okay, you can stop there. You can stop there and answer the question.
Okay. What was Peter's interpretation of the vision? That this was applying to people, that people are not clean or unclean.
Did everybody see that?
Yeah, right.
So, yeah. And just to, because Elizabeth's translation didn't bring this out, in verse 28 it says it was unlawful. In David Stern's translation, because it actually wasn't a law of God that they couldn't go into the house of a Gentile. It was a tradition. Mm-hmm. Okay? So David Stern's translation says it just isn't done to differentiate between that if it was actually a law of God. It came out of the laws of God because the laws of God said that you would become unclean if you touched something that was unclean.
Was that an oral law?
It was part of the oral law or the tradition. Right. At this point in time, the oral law had not been written down.
Yeah, right.
The oral law was written down in around the year
oral, because we just quoted
100.
Memorized.
But they passed it down orally. Right.
Yeah, right.
Right. So anybody have any questions? Because this is really important to see this. It actually affects all of your understanding of Messianic Judaism. Because it's saying that those who are saying that this overturns God's laws, it's not saying that. And of course, we always hearken back to Matthew chapter 5, verse 17. And some of you might know what that says. Anybody know what it says? Matthew 5, 17? Yeshua himself, say it again, Hannah.
I have not come to abolish the law, I have come to fulfill it.
So whenever we find things that seem like God's law is being overturned, it's being changed, it's being said, thrown out, we have to wonder about that and say, are we understanding this correctly? Because Yeshua said that. And it's very, nobody disputes that he said that. I didn't come to abolish the law, I came to fulfill it. So when the theologians start saying, you know, this changes the law is not there, it's a red flag that something is going on. So what we saw here is that's exactly what they were saying. They were using this passage. But if you interpret it the way Peter interpreted it, he wasn't overturning the law. He was saying your prejudice, your tradition is not right. And I'm saying to you that I am declaring people are clean.
They're clean before me.
They're clean before me, and you can go and be with those people. And actually, one of the questions here looks like, what did Peter mean when he said it's something that just doesn't done in Stern or unlawful? That's the differentiation. It really wasn't unlawful. It was just against the oral law, against the tradition.
Is there a passage in the Bible, Rabbi, that in conjunction with this that says, from this point forward, when you go into a Gentile's home, you eat what they put out because it's...
No, there isn't anything explicit that says that. No, no. And there's some nuances to that. You know, certainly if you're invited into a Gentile's home who doesn't know, and they feed you, they give you something, we don't question it. But, you know, if you go to a Gentile's home, he knows that you're Jewish and that you keep the laws and they put out something, then mm-hmm. Because there are people who would even do that because they believe so strongly in this, that you're not supposed to keep to this. Jewish people are not supposed to keep to this. So this is where, you know, in the Messianic movement, the position that we've taken is that if you are Jewish by birth, if you are ethnically Jewish, and God has called you to be a Messianic Jew, meaning a believer in the Messiah who is continuing to live as a Jew, then you need to keep these, because if you don't, you're not living as a Jew. And that there is nothing in the New Covenant, and we'll see other verses to support this, that says that because you've become a believer in the Messiah, as a Jew, you're supposed to stop living as a Jew. There's nothing to that. But that's a very key point to the Messianic movement, also a very controversial, obviously, point. Okay, any questions? Gerardo?
So this prejudice that we see in the Bible, do we see it in Orthodox Judaism?
Today, absolutely. Orthodox Jew would not go into the house of a Gentile and eat there. And it's, we had an interesting...
So how do you interpret that?
Well, they haven't changed. They don't believe in the New Covenant, so they don't accept what God said to Peter. Absolutely.
It's kind of hard to live that way.
Oh, it's very hard. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So that means all the Jews that I know probably are not Orthodox.
Oh, absolutely. Right, right, right.
They also won't touch a woman. Like if you go up to an Orthodox Jew and try and shake their hand.
This has become a huge issue in the Israeli army.
It's judgment, though.
Because for decades, Orthodox Jews would not participate in the Israeli army.
Wow.
And the rest of the population really disliked that, because in Israel, like, everybody, every male, women too, have been in the army, and there's this camaraderie about having fought in the army. And then you have the whole Orthodox population that is not. So finally, like, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago, they began to say, we want to be in the army. But this was a huge issue for the army, because now the army had to provide them kosher food. And not only kosher food, but in the last year, there's been a big fuss, because the army gets together and they sing like the national anthem of Israel. Well, there's another one of these Orthodox rules. A man is not allowed to hear a woman sing. Because it might incite some lustful sensation in them. So there's the Orthodox soldiers in the army, when the women would start singing, they would be told by their rabbis, you walk out. But their sergeant would say, no, he's dead. So they're caught in this, and it's actually gotten to the courts. There's all kinds of stuff going on. Yeah, hold your fingers in your ears. Right, right.
So it's
right.
Okay that everybody fought for them to have a homeland.
Yeah, but you can't listen to a woman sing. Right, and there's other issues, you know, they where they live, and just they have to say prayers at certain times. There's all kinds of it, but they've worked a lot of those out. To their credit, there are Orthodox brigades now in the Israeli army, and they have been, you know, they've been honored because they have fought bravely, and everybody is thrilled about that. But these are the kind of issues that come up because of this, and again, it's not exactly a prejudice. It actually came out of the Bible saying that if you touch something that was unclean, you became unclean, and then you had to go through this ceremony. So therefore, the ruling was made, don't even go in the house of a Gentile. And you know, some of the other things that stepping on a grave would make you unclean. So they would mark graves with whitewash. And if you remember in the New Covenant, Yeshua talks about whitewashed sepulchers. Well, that's because so nobody would touch them, because if you touched them, you'd be unclean, and you wouldn't be able to go in the temple or keep the Passover. This was a big issue about Passover. You had to be ritually clean in order to keep the Passover, and if you didn't keep the Passover, it was like you were cut off from your people. So it was all part of the way all of this was interpreted overzealously. Okay, so to the credit of the leaders, it was always this overzealousness, over piety that I talked about on Saturday in relation to the Sabbath. There was always this over. Josh, you had a question?
Yeah, just going back to what you mentioned about someone is born Jewish, mm-hmm. they find the Messiah. If they do not continue to follow the dietary laws mm-hmm. and things of that nature, they forfeit their salvation.
No. Let me go back over it to make it clear, because I always have to do this. Okay, it's very clear that everybody, Jew or Gentile, is saved by faith, trusting in the atoning sacrifice of the Messiah. What's different is that God, in Acts 15, and we're going to read it here in a couple of minutes, God gave an instruction to the Jewish apostles that the Gentiles who come to believe don't have to be circumcised. Mm-hmm. And when they said that was kind of like shorthand for saying that means they don't have to keep all the what we call Jewish laws. And let me back up a minute. Some of you have heard me say this, that you can take the laws of God and divide them into three categories. You have the spiritual laws that relate to how we relate to God, like you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. You have moral laws that relate to how we relate to each other. Do not lie, do not steal, do not commit adultery, do not murder. All of those laws everybody has to keep, Jew or Gentile. But then you have the Jewish laws. Circumcise on the eighth day, keep these holidays, don't eat these foods. Okay? And what the apostles were basically told by the Holy Spirit in Acts 15 was if the Gentile comes to believe in the Messiah, he doesn't have to keep the Jewish laws. Okay? He can if he wants to. But if we read through the book of Acts, and we're going to look at this in detail in other places, it's very clear that all the early followers of Yeshua who were Jewish continued to live as Jews. They continued to keep the Jewish laws. So today, that has been taught against for many centuries. The Messianic movement, our purpose, our reason for existence, is to be a living witness to the Jewish community that you can be Jewish and believe in the Messiah. But what that means is that I have to, if I'm going to be Jewish and not be a hypocrite, I have to somehow live as a Jew. If I say, oh, I'm Jewish and I'm still Jewish even though I believe in the Messiah, and you know, I'm eating ham sandwiches and not keeping any of the holidays. Well, my Jewish family is going to say, "Well, you're not Jewish. You've converted.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
You're a Christian now."
Yeah, right, right. Mm-hmm.
So, in order, if you are called to be a Messianic Jew, okay, to live out this public demonstration that you can be Jewish and believe in the Messiah, mm-hmm. You have to keep these things, or else you'll be accused of being a hypocrite. Yeah, that's basically it. And now, for the Gentiles, for the non-Jewish people, it's not required, but if they want to keep it, these things, they're welcome to keep these things. And that's why there are many non-Jewish people part of our congregation and every Messianic congregation, because they're interested in how do you keep the Passover, and how do you keep these other holidays, and so we want to learn about that. Once they begin to learn about it, they say, well, we want to begin to do this. Is that okay? And yes, it's okay. You can do those things, but it's not to be saved, okay? And you're not sinning if you don't. And there are many Jewish people.
The Gentiles aren't sinning.
Yeah, and there's many Jewish people who are not. And I believe that they're not sinning because they're not. Mm-hmm. It's just that they haven't heard the call of God to live as a Messianic Jew. Mm-hmm. There are many Jewish people who have an attitude like, I don't want to have anything to do with Judaism anymore. I'm just going to go join a church and nobody's going to know I'm Jewish. That's fine with me. And if that's what God has called them to do, you know, that's between them and God. But if you are called to be a Messianic Jew, then the only way you can do that is by still living as a Jew. And again, now, one other caveat. To live as a Jew doesn't mean to live the way the rabbis have taught. Because that's all of that legalism and all these rules that you guys missed, we were talking about before, but all the rules that have been built up around the laws of God that make it a burden instead of a delight to follow the laws of God. So it's very important to understand that too, because some, you know, I've told some Jewish people who come to know the Lord and they find out about this and they think they have to live like the Orthodox. And that freaks them out right away. So no, it's not like the Orthodox. In a sense, the Messianic movement is finding our way. We're seeking God to understand how do we fulfill the laws as led by the Spirit of God rather than as led by the rabbis who have spent 2,000 years figuring out how many rules they can make to make it more difficult. And it's also clear that, you know, the rabbis did that because they weren't led by the Spirit of God, because they rejected the Messiah. So, you know, there are some very, very knowledgeable and wise and brilliant people who made up these rules, but it wasn't the Spirit of God. And that was actually happening at the time of Yeshua already. He was seeing that they were making rules that were not of God, that were beyond God, and it continued on for the last 2,000 years.
So it was the flesh that was making the rules.
Yeah, it was really trying to please God in their own flesh. Exactly. And without the Spirit of God.
Would you say there was spirits that were not of God involved with that?
Sure. Wow. Religious spirits, the spirit like I identified on Saturday, a spirit of piety. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to show that we're extra. Well, here's another great example of it. One of the Ten Commandments says, "You shall not take the Lord's name in vain." Mm-hmm. Right? Pretty simple. So how did the Jewish people end up making a rules? Don't say it at all. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's not spoken. Instead of the name of the Lord, we say Adonai or Hashem, meaning the name. And it got to the point where nobody even remembered how to say the name. Okay, but again, that was one of those extra pious rules. We want to be so pious that we don't have any possibility that we'll take the Lord's name in vain, so we just won't say it at all. Was that what God meant?
No.
No, he wanted us to say his name in a loving way, respectful way. Right. Call on the name of the Lord. It's all through the Bible, right? But we don't even know how to say it anymore because of this extra piety. So that's another great example of it.
I don't want to go on like a big rabbit trail, but specifically with that commandment, I've always had like, I don't really know what to think about it. It's like, I always think when people are like, oh my God, and then I'm like,
they are. I really think it is. Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's many phrases in English that like make it so you just kind of skirt around it. Like instead of oh my God, oh my gosh, right? Or geez. Whoa, what does that mean? You know? And then the British, of course, with the bloody stuff. I mean, what's that all about? If it's not, you know, it's holy smoke. What's that? You know, it's pretty clear that they're, see, so that's the other interesting thing about these fences is that, you know, if you build a fence, somebody will find a way around it,
yeah,
right? Or under it, or over it, right? Mm-hmm. So people find ways to do the things that they want to do.
It's like hacking.
And even though there's a fence, they'll find a way around the fence, you know? Like I just talked about one tonight. You got to get all the 11 out of your house for Passover, right? So what do? You bring it all to the synagogue, you sell it to the Gentile, and then he sells it back to you after Passover. What's that? That's getting around the fence, right? Yeah. Pretty interesting stuff. You know, just before we think that this all has to do with religion, right? Think about your tax code. What is that? Is that a fence around the law? And what do people do with that fence? You go to your taxman to try to find a way around it, right? Yeah. So it's so much a part of human nature. If you watch sports, you know the they got the rules, right? But the coaches are like trying to figure out a way to make the rules work for them. So did you ever watch the end of a football game and like the team that's behind is about to kick a field goal, right? And the coach on the other team, he's got two timeouts left. So what does he do? What do they call it? Icing the kicker, right? He calls timeout just as the kicker is about to kick the ball. And I've seen games, you've probably seen them, where he actually makes a field goal. It goes through, but they disqualify it because the coach called timeout half a second before he did it. So what's that? That's using the rules, right? It's so much a part of human nature.
Small kids do it too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they learn to do it as children.
Don't touch the table. Well, they'll touch the bottom of the table. They'll
right.
touch the legs of the table.
Touch, you know, cats do it.
Cats do it. Cats do it.
So it's so much a part of human nature. And the sad part about it is that it, and I think this was the crux of what I spoke about on Saturday. You can get this up on the internet if you want to hear it. The crux of what I spoke about Saturday was that the reason Yeshua was getting on their case about this when he said, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, was that this hides the true image of God. Mm-hmm. It makes people see a God who is legalistic and has all these rules rather than seeing a God who is merciful and loving. And that's why he was down on them, because what they were criticizing him about was healing on the Sabbath. How much more an image of a loving God would it be that he would heal people? And they were criticizing him for healing people because it was on Sabbath, because they had made a rule. The way we understand that you can't work on the Sabbath means you can't heal.
But the God thing did not make him holy before God.
What's that?
No,
it doesn't make him holy before God, right. But it keeps people from the Lord because they get this picture of God
right,
as being
right. mm-hmm.
legalistic and nitpicking, and it's got all these rules, and if I were to do this, I would be miserable because I have to keep all these rules. And that's why Yeshua was on their case.
Amount of power too.
Sure, they were the judges, right?
So
right.
everybody had to come to them if
right.
there was any question. And
but I want you to see that it's human nature. It's not just Jewish people. Our own culture has a lot of it, and you know, like we were saying, children do it, cats do it. It's nature. Okay, good discussion. We've gotten overtime already. You had two questions left on this. Okay. Where were we?
I mean, you don't have to
finish. Well,
the law of God?
Was it a law of God that Jews kept from interacting with Gentiles? If so, where is it in the scriptures? It's not in the scriptures. It's a tradition. You'll find it in the Talmud, which is the compilation of the oral law as one of the judgments that were made.
Isn't there a command in Leviticus 2 to like to love the alien? And
yes, absolutely. You're absolutely right, because we were aliens, so we were to love the aliens, yes. Right, and take them in, right. Okay, so we'll stop there, and then we're going to look at the passage of Mark, which is another one of the passages, again, concerning food, that people have looked at and used to say, oh, this means God has changed the law. But we'll see that that's really not what it's about. It's about washing your hands. Take a look at it for homework if you want to take a look at it. Mark 7, 1 through 23. Okay.
So does this meet every 2 weeks?
No, we meet every week. Every week. And the class officially ends at 8:30, so I went over a little bit because the discussion was so hot.